Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Daniela Lazarova and we begin with the news. President Václav Klaus has held a series of top-level consultations with political leaders in an effort to find a way out of the Czech government crisis. A reconciliation attempt between the two feuding parties in government broke down on Wednesday, with both sides reiterating their earlier positions. The Prime Minister, Stanislav Gross, said that if the Christian Democrats could not accept him as head of cabinet, their ministers should resign from office. Christian Democrat leader Miroslav Kalousek said the Prime Minister himself should resign in the wake of a scandal over his private finances, which he said was discrediting the entire Czech cabinet. The third party in the governing coalition, the Freedom Union, has distanced itself from the feud. During consultations with the President on Thursday, Prime Minister Stanislav Gross submitted several possible solutions to the crisis. He said a solution must be found and those who could make it happen should act. The Prime Minister said he did not see much hope for the present coalition given the Christian Democrats' stance and that he was prepared to negotiate with all parties in Parliament. He has not, for the present, requested President Klaus to dismiss the three Christian Democrat ministers. Meanwhile, the Christian Democrat leader Miroslav Kalousek told President Klaus that his party did not want to leave the coalition and intended to tone down its rhetoric in the coming days and possibly weeks. The leader of the opposition, Civic Democratic Party, Mirek Topolánek, who also conferred with the president, said the Civic Democrats would only support a solution leading to early elections. Earlier today, the party rejected speculation that it would support a minority Social Democrat government in return for the approval of a majority first-past-the-post electoral system, which it is known to favour. The opposition Civic Democrats say that whatever the outcome of the government crisis, barring early elections, the government should ask for a vote of confidence in Parliament. Senior party member Vlastimil Tlustý said today that if the government itself failed to act in this respect, the Civic Democrats would not hesitate to initiate a no-confidence vote. In a no-confidence vote, 101 of the 200 deputies in the lower house would have to vote against the government to bring it down. The governing coalition now has a slim 101-vote majority in Parliament. The Civic Democrats on Thursday added more fuel to the scandal surrounding the Prime Minister and his wife by claiming that money from a charity fund set up by the Prime Minister's wife had been channeled to a private account. During Thursday's question and answer session in Parliament, Civic Democrat Deputy Miroslav Beneš said he had reason to believe that an unspecified sum had been transferred to the private account of Libuša Barková, a friend and business partner of the Prime Minister's wife. Barková herself is charged with insurance fraud. The Prime Minister responded to this accusation with anger, asking Beneš to produce the evidence he had or apologise. Meanwhile, Christian Democrat leader Miroslav Kalousek has made public the name of the man from whom he borrowed money to build his home in Bechyně, South Bohemia, in 1997. The loan was allegedly provided by his brother-in-law, a businessman who was murdered several years later. Kalousek said that he was hesitant to make the information public for fear of the impact this could have on his family, but that he now felt it was important to make his financial affairs transparent. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague's English service, and I'm Dita Siedu. And today, U.S. President George W. Bush compares Velvet Revolution celebrations to those that followed the recent elections in Iraq. And 57 years ago to this day, the communists came to power, bringing four decades of authoritarian rule that the country is only just starting to come to terms with. This and the funky up-and-coming band Gaia Messiah up next. Stay tuned. On Thursday, the U.S. President George Bush visited the Slovak capital of Bratislava to hold one of the most anticipated meetings during his five-day trip to Europe. Mr. Bush met his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin, and with the backing of his advisers and senior politicians back home and in Europe, called on the Russian president to reassert his commitment to democracy in Russia. Mr. Bush also met with Slovak politicians, addressed a crowd of several thousand that had gathered on Hviezdoslav Square in Bratislava, and met various other people, including former Czechoslovak dissidents. We have Rob Cameron on the line from Bratislava. Rob, how did Mr. Bush's final day of his European tour go?
Well, Dieter, it was a very, very busy day for President Bush. He started off by meeting senior Slovak officials, Slovak President Ivan Gašparović, and of course the Prime Minister Mikuláš Zurinda. And we should remind listeners that the two men, Mr. Zurinda and Mr. Bush, do enjoy a very close personal friendship, especially because Slovakia has been a very firm ally of the United States over the war in Iraq. But of course the main meeting was with Mr. Bush's Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, and that was a very, very difficult meeting, primarily because they had a very, very long shopping list of things that they needed to discuss. They emerged from that meeting saying they'd had an open, candid exchange of views and had actually reached some specific agreement on a number of issues, such as Iran's nuclear program, North Korea, Russia's entry into the World Trade Organization, and a whole host of other issues, and of course concerns that Russia is backsliding on democracy.
And now that's where most of us thought the friendly meeting between the two presidents, who call each other by their first names, would go sour and result in much chillier US-Russian relations. But it appears that Mr. Bush was not as assertive and demanding as he initially intended to be.
Concerns over Russia's alleged backsliding on democratic reforms and the rule of law and press freedom and so on, they were set to dominate this summit. What actually emerged from the meeting was that Mr. Putin said that Russia has made this transition to democracy and there is no turning back. Mr. Bush said he was satisfied that Vladimir Putin had made a public commitment to preserving democracy in Russia. Of course, Mr. Putin's critics and the people who are pressurizing Mr. Bush back home in the United States won't be satisfied with that.
But Mr. Bush's meeting with his Russian counterpart was not the only event in Bratislava that was dominated by issues of freedom and democracy. Now, Mr. Bush also recalled the Velvet Revolution of 1989, through which the communist regime was brought down in Czechoslovakia before the country split into Slovakia and the Czech Republic some 4 years later. And on Radio Prague on Thursday, we also heard from the Czech writer and former dissident Ivan Klima just before he was going to meet Mr. Bush at a separate event, at which the U.S. president sent his regards to the great Czech democracy and human rights advocate Václav Havel.
It was freedom, really, which very much dominated Mr. Bush's speech to the Slovak people in the center of Bratislava around lunchtime on Thursday. Mr. Bush even compared Slovaks celebrating the fall of communism in 1989 to Iraqis holding up ink-stained fingers after the recent elections, the first democratic elections in Baghdad, and Mr. Bush told the crowd, Slovakia has taken great risks for freedom. Mr. Bush also met a group of what he described as freedom fighters from a number of countries around the world, such as Ukraine, such as Georgia, and of course from the former Czechoslovakia, and among them was the writer Ivan Klima and Sasha Vondra, who is the former ambassador to the United States, both of whom obviously played a role in the fall of communism in the country in 1989. Freedom and liberty really, really played a very, very key motive, a key role in Mr. Bush's trip to Slovakia.
Thanks, Rob. And Rob Cameron was reporting there on the Bush-Putin summit in Bratislava. Now, exactly 57 years ago, on the 25th of February 1948, the communists seized power in post-war Czechoslovakia. This marked the beginning of more than four decades of hardline communist rule, brought to an end by the Velvet Revolution.
Právě se vracím za radu od prezidenta republiky. Mohu vám sdělit, že pan prezident...
What you're hearing is the Czechoslovak communist leader Klement Gottwald on that fateful day in 1948 announcing on Prague's Old Town Square that the resignation of several non-communist ministers had been accepted by the president. Even though the change to a totalitarian system did not happen just overnight, this event was symbolic of the start of one-party rule. Martin Mikula met historian Jan Rychlik and asked him what happened on that cold February day to make it so important in the communists' rise to power.
What happened was a crisis of the government when the ministers for three coalitional parties, National Socialist Party, People's Party and Slovak Democratic Party, passed their demission. This happened because Minister of Interior Václav Nosek, communist, refused to take back to service some police officers who were dismissed for political reasons. When these ministers resigned, the communists called massive rallies and forced President Beneš to accept their resignation and to appoint the new government, which in fact was the government under total domination of the Communist Party.
So was it just these political steps that led to the change of the system, or were there also military forces involved?
Military forces were not involved. However, despite the fact that optically the coup was bloodless and carried out in peaceful way, which, by the way, is fortunately the tradition of the Czechs since the middle of the 19th century, it should be noted that communists had good support and strong support among substantial part of the officers and of the staff, which, however, in a concrete situation meant that if President Beneš didn't agree to appoint the new government, the army wouldn't support him. So he would remain without any real power because the police was totally already in the hands of the communists. So army was behind, was not involved, but probably if the coup would not go along the lines which were prescribed by the communists, they could intervene.
Of course, Czechoslovakia did not become a communist country just overnight. It was also a matter of international situation. Can you say how was the overthrow affected from abroad?
In September 1947 was established the so-called Informbüro or Information Bureau of the Communist Parties, which was the renewed version of pre-war Communist International, Comintern. And the Czechoslovak communists at this meeting were criticized by the Soviets of liberalism and of deviation from the right revolutionary path. And they were secretly ordered to prepare the seizure of the power, if necessary, by coup. Otherwise, the communists before that, they counted more on the elections, and they believed that with the help of left social democrats would be able to seize power in democratic way. So the concrete form of the coup was in fact improvisation and was influenced also from outside.
And Martin Mikula was speaking there to the historian Jan Rychlik. But for most Czechs today, February the 25th is not an important anniversary. The day of the communist takeover in Czechoslovakia is actually a very unpleasant anniversary to most. Those who lived through it prefer to forget it. But the young generation usually has no idea what the date is linked to. But Czechs wouldn't be Czechs if they couldn't poke fun at everything, even the dark chapters of their history. Daniela Lazarová has the story.
Every year on February the 25th, practical jokers in the town of Nový Čín mark the anniversary with a mock parade, poking fun of communist times and communist symbols. Preparations for it have been underway for weeks, and as every year, the organisers are keeping their plans top secret. But it is clear that there will be plenty of Lenin and Stalin costumes and masks, models of nuclear weapons, hammers and sickles, as well as uniforms of the communist era worn by the dreaded secret police, border guards and members of the communist youth movement. Real communist parade artifacts are not hard to obtain. They're still lying around in many Czech attics. Little Soviet and Czechoslovak friendship flags to be waved during parades. Red banners reading "Friendship with the Soviet Union Forever," to which someone had added "and not a day longer," and huge pictures of communist leaders. Many of those who join this parade of communist absurdity every year have taken part in the real thing over and over again for fear of reprisals should they refuse, and they say that in a way it is a huge relief to be able to poke fun of it all now. As for the Communist Party, it claims that February 25th is a day like any other. Although they have scheduled two balls on Friday evening, one in Prague and one in Ostrava, the party spokeswoman has denied any connection to the ill-fated anniversary. Only a small group of hardline communists now turn up to mark the anniversary at the grave of the first communist leader, Clement Gottwald. Their number dwindles every year. This year, only around 70 elderly people turned up, laid flowers, sung the International, and quietly dispersed.
Thanks, Daniela. Now, the Czech Republic is only just starting to come to terms with its communist past. Victims of the 1968 Soviet-led invasion of the former Czechoslovakia may finally win compensation. The lower house of the Czech parliament has approved a bill, now awaiting approval by the Senate, which would provide compensation to relatives of those killed during the invasion, as well as to those raped or injured by Soviet or Warsaw Pact troops who occupied the country until 1991. Brian Kennedy reports.
Just before midnight on August 20th, 1968, the first Soviet tank divisions rolled into Czechoslovakia. Their mission? To crush the brief reforms of the Prague Spring launched by Alexander Dubček and set the stage for hardline communists to take his place. The invasion brought an abrupt and violent end to Dubček's famous attempt to introduce socialism with a human face. Moscow had feared the liberalization movement in Czechoslovakia would spread to other Eastern Bloc countries.
If you concentrate on the first week of the main conflict before Dubček and others signed the so-called Moscow Protocol and returned home, then the figure is something like more than 70 people killed and several hundred people being wounded.
Dr. Oldřich Tuma is the director of the Institute for Contemporary History based in Prague. He notes that scores of people were killed and hundreds injured in the final days of August 1968. Under the bill now awaiting Senate approval, the families of those killed would receive up to 150,000 crowns in compensation, the equivalent to some $6,500, and those injured or raped by the occupation forces up to 30,000 crowns. In total, nearly 100 families could be compensated at that highest level.
If you extend the time until the end of 68, then it's 92 or 94, but then it involves also victims of traffic incidents and so on, but there were cases where Soviet soldiers killed people also in September. There was this case in Eastern Bohemia when a drunken Polish soldier killed two people and wounded several others. But under this new bill, also the cases which occurred much later, so between 69 and 91, so crimes committed by Soviet soldiers, raped women, and so on. But the majority of the cases belong to the first week after the intervention.
The center-right Civic Democrats, who sponsored the bill, had pushed for awarding seven times as much money to victims. But members of the ruling Social Democrats, including the finance minister, Bohuslav Sobotka, had argued that such compensation would be disproportionate to what was given to Czech victims of the Holocaust, for example. Dr. Tuma says that in his opinion, the monetary award can never compensate the victims, but it is important for the government to take action.
I think it's more or less the level of compensation for people who were in concentration camps or used as forced labor. But I wouldn't like that much to comment the level of compensation, because also it is my opinion that anyway you cannot pay with money something like a loss of a life of a son or father or something like that. So there is more symbolic value, and I would agree that the Czech state is in a way responsible for those victims, and it's both political and moral duty to compensate it. The main perpetrator was Soviet Union, responsible for those crimes and losses. But then the debate about how much money, this is really something I must say, I really don't know what would be fair.
Oldřich Tuma, the director of the Institute for Contemporary History. Gaia Messiah is made up of three women and one male. Nikola Brabenek introduces us to this new up-and-coming funky Czech group. Hear the power of the
pack your backpacks. The end of the world is coming. Seriously.
When I first heard the band Gaia Messiah play, I was struck by their attitude, spunk, and fighting spirit. They're definitely not afraid to speak out about the way they see the world. The band is made up of 3 Czech women and 1 Australian man. You can feel a wide variety of influences in their music, but above all, you can feel an incredible surge of energy. I spoke to drummer Misha Cortez and began by asking her how the band got started.
We got together thanks to Spirit, and it happened in 2001.
What's the Spirit?
Intention. So we got Intention with Morella together. We knew that we're creating band. We saw it, like, in the future, where we want to go, and we knew what we need, what people we need. So we tuned ourselves to the intent to be open when the right people are coming, when we're meeting them, wherever it is, that we will recognize them. It's them. And it happened. That's what I mean by the spirit.
How did you recognize your singer? Because she wasn't a singer originally, was she?
She sings just in Gaia Messiah. By voice.
Where were you when you first heard her voice?
First time I met Marka on the street, when my dog was playing with her dog. That's what the first time I heard her voice. And then I used to work in some pub, and she went there, and I already asked her if she want to sing, because it's a beautiful person and beautiful voice. And it's just, I mean, you know it from the first sight, you know. So it happened. She said, yeah, why not? I said, all right, would you like to come for rehearsal? She said, yes. And I said, well, we got gig in 14 days. I go, okay, no problem.
I'm sitting in your rehearsal room, and there's a lot of posters here. You have Bob Marley, Patti Smith, Rage Against the Machine. The inspiration, where do you guys draw your inspiration from?
I see it like they are our parents. We are next generations from these guys. Their genes are in us, because we learn how to play on their songs, you know? So now it's on us to generate the new music. Like architecture. You're learning from some master, and then you do your style. Each member from the band's got different ones. So all together is making good mix. I started to play music because listening wasn't enough anymore. I have to also create it, start to do it, to create something new. So really, like, inner force.
Your band is, it's dominated by women, really. And you sing about environmental issues and social issues. How has the Czech musical scene, which is quite male, I would say, reacted to your band?
Who knows means that they're tuned to the same energy like we are. We are not alone. There's lots of people, same tuned, but, and who doesn't matter anyway. We playing music, but we don't do it like men do. Because we are women, we're doing by our way. But the reason is same, music. The song is happening. But the way how we're doing it, it's our way, and it's not male's way.
Where do you see yourselves going? What are your plans for the future?
We want to play abroad, wherever, to see our planet while it's still alive. And, of course, make good name of Czech Republic. Represent our country, because there's no Czech band, never, in the world. So that's challenge, real big one, and we're going there.
Is this why you sing in English?
Not this, because our singing, the songs are happening like our band happened together. So it's like the snowball, and it's happening in English. We can't help it. We don't drive it like that, but English is great for this type of music. It's difficult to make it in Czech language. It doesn't work together with notes, what we want to play. Sometimes, yes, yeah, so parts of the songs are Czech. Also, it happened like that. It just came to us, these words. Lásko, zima, očím si brown, I feels like knocking on heaven's door. Relations between human beings, they are like warped completely between men, between women, between everybody, between parents and kids. It's warped. So lots of artists starting now feel it, and it's a little wave, so we are part of the wave.
What is it that's warped?
Everything's through numbers. All right, let me tell you example. It's like our government. Our president is a counter. You know what I mean? He's not any philosopher. He's a counter economist. And it looks like that. Whole our republic looks like that. Everything's just through numbers. The importance is put on things you can count. But where is respect for old people? Where is respect for kids? Where is respect for just human beings, for us? No one's talking about it. It's like forgotten. So it's lack of love, the real love, respect. That's what we're trying first between us to generate, and then we can share it with people on a gig and with you and with everybody. So anyway, the first point is me. I have to be like that first. Then I can share it with my friends, and then we can share it and blah, 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 blah.
Have you gotten the reaction that maybe people think you're a bit utopian?
Of course. From beginning, that's... But also, these people start to think about that. And that's what it's important. That's how it starts. Think, and then a little bit change. It takes years, of course. It takes time. But it helps to think. Who knows if it's too late or not.
The Arts by Nicola Brabanek. Join us again tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.